The conference is now being recorded.
Good morning. My name is Gloria Spratley Brown, and I will be serving as the facilitator for the conference call regarding the Funding Opportunities 2014-15 under the Adult Education and Family Literacy Act. We have several competitive grants that are currently posted on our website. We have a grant to offer service for adult general education. We have one to support our corrections education, Native American education, and English literacy and civics education. We have about 1 minute until 10 o'clock, so I will wait about a minute, and then we'll go ahead and get started. As we're preparing for the conference call, just a few tips on conference call etiquette. If you would please place your phone on mute. You may place your phone on mute by pressing *6. At such time, we're opening for questions and answers, and you would like to ask a question, you can unmute your phone by pressing *6 as well. This will help minimize the background noise. The conference call will go as follows. I'll be referencing several documents. I will reference the PowerPoint presentation that is currently posted on our division webpage. I'll also reference the actual request for proposal. I'll primarily reference the adult general education document because corrections education, Native American education, the concept and the methodology is the same. The targeted population is different, but the essence of what is required in the application will be the same. As such, I will interject English literacy and civics education. We have an agenda that we posted on slide 5 of the PowerPoint presentation. We'll have Zelda Rogers participating in the call today. She's the Adult Ed Director. We'll have Tara McLarnon. Right. She'll be participating in the call today. She works in our accountability section and will go into some good details about accountability and reporting. And then we'll wrap up with Julie Dillard giving you some information about our survey. And then I will facilitate questions and answers at the conclusion of the agenda. With that said, I'll go ahead and get started. Again, I want to welcome you to the conference call for the 2014-2015 Adult Education Family Literacy Competitive Grant Funding Opportunity. I'm currently referencing the PowerPoint presentation. And if you will go with me to slide 2 of that presentation, it just reiterates the information about our call today. I will be hosting 2 calls, one at 10 a.m. and one at 2, to ensure that we're able to cover as many people as possible to listen in on the call. This call is being recorded. In the event that you need to reference back on the information discussed during the call today, it normally takes about 24 hours, and we will have the recording available. And it's typically posted on our website in the same section where the funding information is located. Many times, not all the staff is able to listen in on the call, so this is a good opportunity to have other members of your team listen in on the discussion. Slide 4. It reminds us of the put your phone on mute and the instructions to do so. Again, this will help minimize during the call. I do want to remind you again that this call is being recorded. On slide 5, I introduced the agenda earlier, just highlighting how we plan to cover all of the required information for the conference. I am now on slide 6.
What? Can you?
And And our goal
is to become a PowerPoint.
I can hear a discussion in the background. Someone is trying to access the PowerPoint presentation. If you would please put your phone on mute by pressing star 6. Thank you. I am on slide 6 of the PowerPoint presentation. Just to generally tell you, our goals today would be to provide you with the information to submit your competitive application, answer any programmatic questions, and share information regarding the programmatic implementation of adult ed and our expectations, to provide you with some performance reporting information, and to give you some instructions on how to submit your application. On slide 7, at this time, I'm going to mute the entire call. Let me get some instructions here. One second for me, please. I'll continue with the presentation as I try to mute the presentation. I'm still hearing some background noise. If you're joining the call, please place your phone on mute by pressing star 6.
Presentation mode is now enabled.
Thank you. If you're just joining us, we are on the PowerPoint presentation, page 7. As we design this PowerPoint presentation, we're designing it from a perspective that we may have some new people that are not familiar with our adult ed and family literacy program that would be interested in applying for the dollars. We know that there are some seasoned people on the line as well that have offered adult ed services for a number of years. So please bear with us as we try to give a general overview as well as talk specifically about the application process. So this is under the Workforce Investment Act. It is Title II of the Act. On the next slide, the primary purpose, again, for the adult ed dollars would be to help qualifying participants become literate and obtain knowledge and skills necessary for entering and retaining employment, entering into post-secondary, and training and obtaining self-sufficiency. Notice how I highlighted those key words. We're here to help individuals become literate, help them get employment, retain employment, transition into post-secondary education, and to become self-sufficient. We're also supporting, and our goal would be to help adults complete their high school credential or its equivalent. And also a primary purpose would be to help our parents be full partners in their child's education. So again, that covers our family literacy component, to help our parents obtain the skills necessary to become full partners in the educational development of their children. So the primary purpose for the Adult Education and Family Literacy Act. However, under the Act, we have some additional options that you may use the dollars to support. We talked about the family literacy component. The other component would be our English literacy and civics education. And again, it's to help individuals of limited English proficiency achieve competencies in the English language. Now, under adult education, you may offer all three components. You may offer adult general education, you may offer family literacy, and you may offer English literacy and civics education under that one funding stream. However, the federal government thought it necessary to offer a separate fund source, a totally different fund source for English literacy and civics education. Therefore, you'll find a second competitive application specifically designed for English literacy and civics education, and we'll speak a little bit more about that. So as you're developing your programs, you can pretty much overlap your English literacy and civics services, or you can spend the dollars in the standalone application. And you may apply for only adult general education and cover all three components, or you may choose, I only want to offer English literacy and civics education, and choose to apply for that fund source separately. If we move to slide 10, we're talking about the targeted population and how it's defined in the Act, the Adult Ed Act. Adult means instruction below the post-secondary level. Individuals 16 years of age or older and who are not enrolled or required to be enrolled in a secondary school under the state law and lack proficiency, basic English skills, do not have a secondary high school diploma or its equivalent, and are unable to speak, read, write in the English language. The do not have the secondary diploma or its equivalent, that's the primary target population. But as many of you seasoned providers know, we do sometimes have to serve individuals whose TABE test below 8 points.
Yeah, it's a TABE test below 8.9.
TABE test below 8.9, you are authorized and allowed to serve them. So we'll move on to slide 12. Because this is a competitive year, we provided for you the various types of eligible applicants. So we may receive applications from a variety of eligible agencies, as shown here on slide 12. Slide 13, excuse me, shares our distribution of the federal dollars. We have received an official intent to fund the state with a proposed dollar amount of $37 million. However, we do not and will not receive the official award notification from the federal government until July. So with that said, here's how we're proposing to distribute the dollars. We're proposing $27 million for adult general ed, $2.1 million for corrections education, $100,000 for Native American, and I mentioned to you earlier that we receive a separate fund source for English literacy and civics, and we will be disbursing $6.9 million for a total of $37 million. At this time, I'll pause and allow Zelda Rogers to give you some background information on adult education.
Excuse us as we play musical chairs here for a minute. Okay, I want to discuss some of the goals that you need to address in the grant application. And first is to increase the number of adults served. If you look at your enrollment information, your current enrollment for 12-13, and look at some previous years, and set some goals for how you can recruit additional students into your program. Increase student achievement. And if you look at the next one, improve your program and teacher quality. So those are very closely tied to each other. You know, the state has the requirement of having a bachelor's degree, but districts can impose additional requirements for their teachers. So, you know, making sure that those teachers have the credentials that they need and also that they're effective in the classroom. Support your career pathways strategic goals. We no longer have separate funding for career pathways, so we have embedded those goals into the federal AGE grant. and ensure accurate data collection and reporting. This is very key to everything that we do with this, and you'll hear more about that from Chair McLarney as we go along in this presentation. On the Career Pathway Systems goal, the goal that we've had in our strategic plan for the last several years has been to increase the number and percentage of students that enter post-secondary education and earn a certificate degree and or an industry credential. And if you'd like to look at that strategic plan, you can go to the web, the URL that's listed in the presentation. Now, some of you that are new may not be aware of this, but every adult education student will have a career plan using either Florida Choices or a similar system. So this is something that you will be asked when you're being monitored, when the compliance group comes to you. So they're going to want to know that your students do have a career plan. Now, in ESOL or some of the others where the students are not able to read yet, they're not able to, they just don't have the skills that they can explore and plan a career, there are other ways that you can do that. So we can discuss that with you if you need to do it. Our 12-13 data shows that 27% of the students transition to post-secondary education. So our goal in the next 5 years is that we want to increase this to 50% so that all adult education students who do earn a high school diploma or GED will successfully transition by the end of the following academic year into post-secondary education. And this is really important because we know that the majority of jobs out there now do require more than just a high school diploma or GED. So we want to really encourage those students to go on and get, even if it's a career certificate. So with all of this means that our efforts and resources will be aligned to the four major goals. So we want to improve our learning gains and improve secondary school completion, post-secondary enrollment, and improving employment. So these are some of the components in your presentation that are listed for the career pathways. So support, services, and these are things that you will include in your narrative and your budget as you go along. Career exploration and planning, the partnerships. A lot of our programs are partnering, let's say, for example, a district program is partnering with a tech center or a college so that students at the same time can enroll in adult education and CTE at the same time if that's the choice that they're wanting to make. Professional development, making sure that all instructional staff have consistent implementation and career pathways. For the last 2 years, we have offered a Career Pathways Institute, and we're going to be, we won't be doing that this year. We'll be rolling that out with the ACE conference. So we won't have a separate institute for professional development. And contextualized instruction, we really strongly encourage that you do that so that your students will learn more about industry and occupational information. And certainly look at those bridge programs that can use between adult education and post-secondary education. Our priorities in professional development, and the reason I want to talk about these things is so that you can do some planning and look at this grant in your budget and some of the activities that you're doing. Our priorities for 14-15 will be college and career readiness standards implementation, and this is in your ABE programs. So we're currently planning about 20 workshops around the state. We will have them so that you can drive to them in most situations. But looking at that and planning on your budget if you're going to be able to send some teachers and administrators to these workshops. Career Pathways Accelerated Models. If you went to the Career Pathways Institute that we held back in December, we introduced the concept of IBEST. And that was what I just mentioned. With adult ed, you can't pay for CTE through the adult ed, but also if you partner with somebody, you could, for instance, have GED classes in the morning and then a CTE class in the afternoon. But we'll be providing more information and support for that as we go throughout the year. Some of the things that we'll be sponsoring through the state. Now, the ones that I've just mentioned, those will be through our Professional Development Institute for Adult Educators, and that's IPDE. Now, some of the things that we'll be doing, webinars, training calendar, and all of these will be posted on the IPDE website. Choices, CADE, CASAs, and accountability workshops will be available by request, or we'll be including those in our training plan. I did. IPDE is the Institute for Professional Development for Adult Educators. Okay, so we will have that training plan out in September, and we are going to increase the number of accountability workshops that we're having this year. Tara McLarnon will be leading those. We'll have the face-to-face regional workshops on college and career readiness. Okay, one of the things, you're going to hear more about the Adult Education Program Improvement Plan on the second year of funding. You're going to hear more details about that. But a lot of times people ask us, what happens if the state does not meet their targets? Well, if we do meet our targets, we get incentive funds. And a couple years ago, we received about $1 million, and that's how we started off our Career Pathways Initiative. If we don't meet our targets, what happens is all of these are reported to the Office of Career and Technical Adult Education, OCTE.
Yes.
They've just recently changed their name. So all that data is reported to them, and they do report that to Congress. And Congress funds adult education throughout the nation. So it's very important that, you know, as we're looking at our targets and we're having to negotiate those with OCTE, that you're also looking at those state targets and trying to work for that, so work forward. So it does make a difference if we meet our targets or not. Okay.
Thank you, Zelda. In this section of the conference call, I'm actually going to kind of go over how to submit your application and speak with you a little bit about some of the special components within the application. What is important here, I just want to reiterate something I heard Zelda mention as she talked about the career pathway and perhaps partnering with a post-secondary program so that our adult ed students could possibly be dual enrolled or dual serviced, perhaps adult ed in the morning and some sort of CTE course in the afternoon. Please be reminded that you cannot use adult ed dollars for the CTE instruction. That's the point that Zelda was talking about, perhaps partnering with the CTE program that you can coexist with this one student. I just want to reiterate that as we move forward. The competitive application is due on May 19th by 5 o'clock. We will not and cannot accept any applications after that point. The applications come in through an intake process, and they are verified that they met the minimum standards before they're provided to my office. So I would strongly encourage you not to wait to the 19th to try to drive up here or get the applications up here. You really want to at least meet the minimum standards to get your application in the door so that you can participate in the competitive process. We will be requesting volunteers to help us evaluate our grants. We have a wonderful, wonderful web-based evaluation system. We instituted the system about 3 years ago. It kind of cuts down about 4 weeks of work here in our office and about a week's work for our volunteers. So what we're looking for, we've announced this opportunity through a memo from our chancellor. He sent out, I think a couple of weeks ago, a couple of weeks ago, around April 8th, thereabouts, to announce this funding opportunity phone call, as well as inviting those of you to volunteer to be reviewers. I strongly suggest our new
adult ed directors to take part in this volunteer service to be an evaluator. It is a wonderful opportunity to see what some of our other programs around the state, what they're doing. We have a system by where you will not be evaluating your own application, and you will not evaluate applications within your geographical area. So if you have not gone out on our website, please do so. I'll also give you a phone number later in the presentation of Julie Dillard, who's responsible for enrolling our volunteers. But we're also going to post later this afternoon the link that you can go to automatically sign up for as a volunteer. And I strongly encourage our new adult directors to participate in that. We will have the application read by three independent reviewers, and we will average the score. And we have a minimum cut score of 70 or greater. And because we do have county allocations, it's important that when you're requesting your dollars to support your program, only request the dollars that you will need for your program. We have on, I think it was slide 12, we showed you about 14 or so different types of organizations that are eligible to apply for the dollars. And some of our larger metropolitan areas, we know that we have our districts and colleges that support adult education, but we also have some of our smaller CBO, not-for-profit organizations, libraries that also support adult education. So we're just asking that you only apply for the amount that you will need to support your program, and consider that in those larger areas, how you can work collaboratively with the other partners in the area to ensure that we're offering adult ed services in every possible community within your area. The funding budget period will be July 1, 2014 through June 30, 2015. Under the law, we do multi-year awarding. So if you're participating in this upcoming award period, which start on July 1, 2014, you could potentially have at least 2 years of funding. That is contingent on you successfully meeting your performance outcomes. So you could potentially have 2 years or even more once you enter the competition. And the law says that I cannot add a new eligible participant in the awarding process unless they have participated in the competitive process. So this is the great opportunity. This is the great time. You get in now, potentially you will be there for multiple years to come. Now we'll start looking at the actual request for proposal. And I'll primarily reference the adult general proposal, which will cover corrections and Native American. And then I'll spend a little time talking specifically about those things that are different in the English literacy and civics application. So I'll be kind of toggling back between the PowerPoint presentation and the adult general education request for proposal. On the PowerPoint page 25, it provides you the link where to go and get the application. I strongly ask that you read the instructions provided in the application. And because it's competitive, and you'll hear me say that a lot, here at the agency, we will not be the individuals making that decision. So once the application arrives here at the office and it's dispersed out to those three individual reviewers, we will not be able to add any additional information that perhaps you left off. So please be mindful of reading the instruction, following the format and the narrative format as outlined in the application, and use the checklist that's on the last page to help you organize and sort your submission. In the narrative section, we ask that you limit your page to 20 pages. We want you to be concise. That does not include any of those attachments. We do have several different attachments that are required. We ask you to attach those things in addition to your 20-page narrative component. Please be mindful of the font and the size. If you've ever volunteered to read a grant and you have multiple grants to read, you will find that this format is very easy for the evaluator. So we strongly encourage that you follow the format here at the bottom of slide 26. The narrative components. Zelda introduced the direction and what Florida is looking for in regards to your narrative responses in the application. So I strongly encourage that as you're looking through the app, as you're looking through your narrative and you begin to respond to the need and the program design, that you're taking into consideration those key elements and points that Zelda mentioned that the agency would be looking for and looking toward. On page one of the request for proposal, kind of reiterates the information that Zelda mentioned to increase the number of adults, student achievement, professional development, and the quality of our teachers, career pathway, and accurate data. So I would make sure that my implementation plan, my program plan, and everything tied back to those areas because the evaluators will be instructed to focus their evaluation on those critical areas as listed under the priorities and purpose on page one. Looking at the request for proposal, I'm on page two. Zelda talked about the performance expectations and our target performance measures set by the U.S. Department of Education. It is our expectation that each and every eligible agency that's awarded funds would meet or exceed our state target. We've received a lot of calls once we released this application about where is the target form, where is my form where I estimate my enrollment. We have determined that if our goal for each and every one of our providers will be to meet the state target, that it is not necessary for you to provide us any estimates because the actual count, what really matters, is what you submit through your data system, what is reported in Table 4 of the NRS. That's what really matters. So what we want you to focus on is data accuracy, submitting your data correctly, submitting your data on time. And at the end of the program year, the goal would be to meet the state target. If on the second year, because our first year is 14-15, we're considering that's your base. That's the year of the new funding cycle. So at the conclusion of the first year, you will have our performance, we will have performance data, actual performance data. We will begin to look at program improvement plans in year two. At the conclusion of year two, we're going to be looking back at, during year two, we're going to be looking back at year one to determine how well are you performing in year one. How well did you perform as compared to year one? So as you look at page two, to try to simplify it, year one will be 14-15, Year two will be 15-16. As we move forward in year three, four, and subsequent years, we're going to be looking to determine if you met or improved in your target based on the state target. So Tara McLarnon will give you some more information. It's there on page two. But all that to say, we do not require you to submit the adult target form any longer, because what really matters is what actually comes out at the end of the program year. On page three, technical assistance, all of our applicants will be able to receive technical assistance from our department. So if you look at technical assistance and what we're willing to offer, we've talked about the targeted population and who's eligible. Page four of the request for application reiterates the due date and the amount of dollars that's set aside for this one funding category. And we have attached in the attachment section the actual allocation chart by county. On page five, Julie Dillard's name is mentioned there. I mentioned earlier, if you're interested in being one of our volunteer reviewers, you can contact Julie, as well as by the end of today, you'll have a link up on our website where you can go out online and register to be one of our evaluators. Under the assurances, each college and district superintendent and or college president would have on file here at the department the terms, conditions, and assurance document. They're only required to sign a new document if the leadership change. However, for many of our other categories, not district or college, you will be required to sign the terms, conditions, and assurances and submit that information. If you look down at the bottom of page five, we're asking that our non-local education agencies, if you are not a college and not a district, you will be required to provide from page bottom of page five, top of page six, six additional items that are required by our non-educational agencies. You're not required to submit those in your initial application submission by May 19th. However, after the conclusion of the evaluators and you have been selected to be an awarded agency, you will be required to provide us those six additional items prior to us issuing you an award letter. To keep the competition fair, we did not want to impose any additional documents on our non-LEAs prior to the award. So as of May 19th, all eligible applicants will be submitting the same information. However, under our state law, if you are a non-LEA, you will be required to submit some additional documents. Something new on our application this year would be your DUNS number. Many of your agencies are familiar with that. If not, talk to your finance officers to ensure that if they haven't registered, that they make sure they go out and register and get a DUNS number for your agency. Now we're moving into seven of the proposal, where we're actually getting into the narrative. The criteria items listed are the exact criteria items that our evaluators will be looking for as they review and score your application. So if it were me and I was submitting this application, I would ensure that as I'm responding to that component of the application, that I'm responding clearly enough that an evaluator can simply go down my narrative and identify how I have responded to each of the criteria components listed in each section. The evaluators will be instructed to look at that to determine the points based on your ability to respond to each of the narrative components and the criteria. In the needs category, you want to make sure that you are providing some demographic data to support the need for adult ed services. We know that there's a need across the state and across counties, but you want to make sure that you provide a strong application providing data to support the need. Measurable goals. We talked about making sure that you have enough enrolled participants, that you will be able to produce education completion points, produce completers to complete their adult high school equivalent, and that you will have students that will transition into post-secondary education. Past effectiveness, past experience is important. Perhaps you are new at offering adult ed services at your facility. However, you've had past experience as an educator, past experience as an adult educator. You've had past experience working in a collaborative relationship with maybe a larger adult ed program in the community. So past experience here doesn't necessarily mean that your agency offered adult ed services through this grant, but the past experience of those that are implementing and delivering the instructional services. Under methodology and the career, adult career pathway, I think Zelda did an outstanding job kind of explaining to you the direction Florida would like to go in regards to adult career pathway and staffing, professional development, talking about making sure that the teachers that are employed are teachers of high quality, and coordination, coordinating with other organizations to provide more comprehensive experience for your participants and students, that either being partnering with the CTE as to assist that student with transitioning into post-secondary ed, transitioning with other larger educational providers. Many times, for an example, you may have a community adult ed program where the community would have the students, because students, participants in the community can get to that community center. Well, the educational facility, such as a college or district, they would have the seasoned teachers. They will have the highly qualified teachers. So a great partnership and collaboration would be for the LEA or the education institution to offer the teachers to that community center. There are a lot of different things you can do to collaborate. If you choose to collaborate and do some contractual agreement where money from your grant will be awarded to another provider to offer instructional services, professional development, you will enter into a contract service agreement. To keep it simple, if the person that you're paying is not employed with your institution, most likely that's a contractual arrangement. It's important that you pay attention to the contractual arrangement agreement. It's a requirement under the Florida Financial Services. We've offered some resources on our website, the same site that you went to receive the request for proposal information. If you go further down on that page, you'll see a header, resources. We've provided a short PowerPoint presentation on how to prepare a contract service agreement. We've also provided a link to the Department of Financial Services where they put together a very good document on contractual service agreements. Now, when you initially prepare your application, you probably will not have already entered into the contractual arrangement, but you perhaps would have thought them through. You will know whom your collaborative partners will be, and you can write that in your application. However, before the department will be able to issue an award letter, you will have to provide us with the actual contract service agreement for our review and approval, because we want to make sure that you're in a solid arrangement and that you have clear, defined, quantifiable, deliverable, and performance expectations. So in the initial submission of your application, we want to make sure that you respond to all the criteria listed on page 11, but do be mindful if you're proposing in your budget any sort of contractual arrangement, you will be required to provide us with that information. In many cases, some of our providers will already have a proposed contract service agreement that they will include in their application. But before we're able to issue the final award, we would have to see that executed contract service agreement arrangement. Flexible scheduling and support. We've had a couple of questions regarding support services, dealing with the adult fee, and hopefully we provided some good Q&A to help you make the decision how you want to spend your dollars and support services. Basically, the law says you can use adult general ed funds to minimize barriers to students enrolled in your program. Doesn't define what those barriers are. It could be a number of things. Perhaps the fee may be a barrier for a participant, cannot afford it. Nothing prohibits you from using the federal funds to support any barriers. However, I do want to caution you. We've put out a number of memos from our former chancellor regarding this issue, that the federal dollars are not intended to subsidize state-imposed fees. So I really caution you to using the federal dollars. Be mindful of that. Perhaps seek private funding to support the fee, but it is an allowable expense. Under English Literacy and Civics Education, at the bottom of page 11, we wrote optional, so you will not be scored whether or not you offer English Literacy and Civics through your general grant. It's an option. We encourage that you offer the service, but many providers choose not to use their adult general dollars for English Literacy and Civics. They would rather apply for the separate application under the $6.9 million that we're offering separately for English Literacy and Civics, and that's ideal. That's preferred, because we really want you to use the English Literacy and Civics separate fund. Information management system. You will find that we provided for you a minimum. I'm going to find it in my attachments here. What, at a minimum, your information management system should be able to collect on your student intake. But make sure that your information management system will be able to capture the data as required by the NRS. We also have links on our website under the Adult Ed link that will give you some information on the National Reporting System, also known as the NRS. So I strongly encourage, if you're a first-time applicant, that you go out and take a look at that so that you will understand what are the expectations with collecting the data that is required to be submitted. Under the attachment, page 35, you will find a student data summary form. This is, at a minimum, the expectation for student data information. So be mindful of that. Those are requirements and things that you must be able to collect and provide to the department through our college system, district reporting system, and our not-for-profit system or our other provider system. And that kind of summarizes page 12, data collection, student data reporting. Please reference back so that you can see at a minimum. Evaluation, how will you evaluate your program? Outside of the national reporting system that will evaluate your performance, how will your district and what will your district use as an evaluation tool to ensure that you're offering a quality adult ed service? When you get to page 14, there are some general items that are required by our agency. Our strategic plan, some support for our strategic initiatives. As you notice, they're fixed, and we will not be evaluated on it, but you will be expected to respond. And how will you disseminate? How will you let your community know the great things that you're doing in your program? How will you recruit students, disseminate information about your program? And I love the budget. I think from a program manager review, the budget, we spend more time evaluating the budget, determining whether or not your proposed expenditures are allocable, necessary, and reasonable. And it's our responsibility here at the department, the program managers, as they review, they will be signing off that your budget meet at a minimum those three criteria. So as you're developing your budget and you're writing your narrative, think about how you're spending your dollars. Make sure that you are following, if need be, if you're purchasing equipment, that you're following your agency's procurement practices, rules, and regulations. And make sure that you can tie every single expenditure back to the implementation of adult ed services at your agency. Later in this, in the packet, we give an example on how to complete a budget form. It's just an example, but we just want you to be mindful that colleges and districts, the function codes, the object codes, take your time and put that information in. Because when the program manager is reviewing your application, that's going to be very important. It will minimize the amount of back and forth and back and forth conversation between you and the program manager once the application has been reviewed and recommended for funding. Some of our providers, being that you've served adult ed in the past and participated in our application process in the past, you've received some recommendations and modifications of past budgets. I strongly encourage that you reach back, look back at some of the modifications and corrections that the program managers offered to you to make sure that when you're submitting your application that it's clean, concise, and meet at a minimum all the standards that are required. Here on page 15 of the adult general education application, there's a whole little section here on the budget narrative. Under the performance method, our local education agencies, that's our, those will be our colleges and districts, you will be awarded under our cash advance and reporting distribution system. Other agencies will be on reimbursement with performance. So any of our CBOs will be on reimbursement with performance, which means you will have to upfront the cash to pay for your teachers, to pay for your instruction, to pay for all the operational services, equipment. You would have to meet a performance expectation, show us some expenditures that you've spent toward the program, and then we would reimburse you back. That is a state rule and regulation, and you would have to go through the comptroller's office to meet certain criteria to be allowed on our cash drawdown system. So if you're one of our other awarded agencies and you would like to be on the cash drawdown system, after you have been recommended for funding, I can connect you to our comptroller's office and you can get all of the specifics on how your agency could qualify for the cash system. We do have some fiscal requirements that if you're on the cash system, you would have to make sure, on all systems really, if you're an awarded agency, you must keep good records, good documentation. We have a 5-year minimum of retention, record retention. If your agency is in an audit situation with that particular grant, you would have to keep the information 5 years after the close of the audit or the finding. If you have an audit finding and you're working through a resolution, you would have to keep the information 5 years after the close. When you get your project award notification, it will provide you with all of the pertinent information you will need to implement your program. We have a document called the Green Book that we use here at our agency. That's my one-stop all-in-all, because as a new provider or an existing provider, if you go to our website and look at the Green Book, it will provide you a lot of information on how the Florida Department of Education disperse, implement, award, and manage our federal grant system. I will strongly encourage you that you do not obligate any funds until you have received the award notification, also known as the DOE 200 award, in your hand. What we will do, and we've done in past years, all official award notifications must be sent to the agency head. So if that's the executive director, if that's the college president, district superintendent, and we know that it may take a while from the college president's office to get to the dean or the coordinator of the adult ed program. So as a courtesy, our program manager will provide our dean, adult ed director, with a scanned copy of the original that's sent to the agency head. You can use that scanned copy to get to your finance officer to begin to encumber your funds. But I strongly encourage that you wait for that 200 before, because in a competitive year, just because you were the provider and received the awards in past year, until you are officially notified and you see your name on our proposed award list, you don't want to obligate any of the federal dollars. I'm on page 17 of the General Education Award application. Admin costs, including indirect costs, is a maximum of 5%. There is a special rule. If for any reason your particular district or college or agency deem it's necessary to go beyond that, read the special rule. We have instructions on our website at that link that give you instructions on what you would be required to do and submit with this application certain documents to be considered under the special rule. Since I've been doing this for a number of years, probably about 14 years, I've only known one that was approved, but by the time we went through the whole process, they didn't even use the special rule. So be mindful that it is difficult, but it is an option that if you choose to do, it's open for you. Just being mindful of what we consider to be admin costs. Many times our programs would like to send the deans, directors to conferences and meetings. All of that travel would be considered administrative costs unless that dean or administrator come back to the district or college or agency and provide a training, sharing the information with the other staff, then that would not be considered administrative costs. So as you're looking at costs and what you're proposing to charge to the grant, be mindful of the separation between administrative costs and non-administrative costs. Financial consequences, if you fail to perform or meet performance expectations, and we've already established that every single person's performance expectation would be whatever the state target is. The department will have the right to rescind payment or stop payment or pay partial payment if programs do not meet their performance expectation. Please read the executive order there. All of our programs are required to go through fiscal management training, all of our CBOs. That fiscal management training is offered by the department, and it's usually held here at the department. So please, it will be wise to include in your budget our community-based and faith-based organizations to include travel for that particular training. And it's usually held, I can't remember, but it's held each year. Usually in the first 6 months of the program year, you'll have that training. I strongly encourage you to also reach out to the Department of Financial Services website. They also offer grants management training, accountability training, and you can register for those training classes as well. That particular one's not required. The requirement is that you come to the Department of Education's CBO, FBO, required training. We are at the point now for performance accountability. I think I'm going to pause and allow Tara to come and speak with you regarding performance accountability. And then I'll come back and go over the remaining parts of the application. And I think Julie's going to talk, and we'll talk a little bit about English literacy and civics education. Tara?
All right. As Gloria mentioned, a significant portion of this is the data reporting and collection piece so that we can look at performance. Under the statutory requirements of the Adult Education and Family Literacy Act, as well as the Workforce Investment Act, there is a reporting requirement. We use this information, hopefully you're using it locally to support program improvement, but we are also using it at a state level for state level program improvement as well. Go ahead. All right. As mentioned, anybody, any grantee receiving federal funding for adult basic education, adult secondary education, and English for speakers of other languages are required to report data for NRS purposes. There may be other reasons to be reporting adult education, but those are the primary programs used for NRS. The state of Florida is required annually to submit a report to FOSTA that is used to evaluate our adult education program effectiveness. One of the things that we are striving very carefully for is to make sure that we're using uniform reporting systems with common definitions and terminology across the nation. We use established EFLs, or educational functioning levels, that is determined using test scores. We use educational gain as an effectiveness measure, students that move from one educational functioning level to another. And as Gloria has mentioned, there is a tie to the performance of local education agencies as well as state for continuation of federal funding. So for some of you who sort of work on both sides of the house, CTE and adult education, or for those of you who work only in adult education, there are some unique reporting requirements specific to NRS. In this case, students must be enrolled a minimum of 12 contact hours in the program year to be NRS reportable. Now, that is a cumulative amount, not 12 hours for one specific course or during one reporting window. We do look cumulatively across the year, so it is, as long as the student is there for at least 1 hour, we encourage you to collect that data and report that information from the student. We aggregate it up here at the student level to determine who would be pulled into the cohort for NRS. For NRS purposes, when we're tying a student to an educational functioning level, the lowest educational functioning level is utilized, and then we look for an educational gain from that level. So for students who maybe are enrolled in more than one program, adult basic education and GED prep over the course of a year, we would go with whatever was the lowest educational functioning level for that year. That's why it's important for you to report all education data, not just the most recent education data. We do acknowledge that there is growing interest in distance education courses. Those courses must use on-site proctored assessments to be NRS reportable. In addition, distance education also must derive the contact hours similar to classroom hours would use. Co-enrolled high school students are excluded from NRS. They are reportable for state funding in our workforce development model, but for purposes of NRS, co-enrollment high school students are excluded. So we talk a lot about these educational gains, and those are students who who advance from one functioning level to another in a program year. So we are looking at the student's functioning level as reported on the individual student records that are reported. We are also tying that, we call those LCPs here, learning completion points. We are also looking at tying those specifically to test records. Initial placement for ABE and EFL students into the lowest EFL must be based on assessment scale scores. There is a link in the web in the PowerPoint to a technical assistance paper on adult education assessments. I highly encourage you to read through that. I even would encourage you to look at assessments that you are perhaps not offering to see if they may be a better fit for the program that you're offering. There is some variation in assessments that are available for the programs. In addition to educational functioning levels, the OCTE also collects some follow-up measures. For those of you who have been in adult education for a while, you may remember the goals that we had. These were replaced with these outcome measures, looking at students who entered employment, students who retained their employment, students who obtained either a secondary school diploma or a GED or whatever high school equivalency there will be, and also placement into post-secondary education or training. Please be aware that some of this information is based off of self-reported student information that is collected. There was a memo sent out on the 23rd of April regarding some reporting changes for 14-15 with regards to the intern employment piece. So I would encourage you definitely to read up on that if you are planning on participating in 14-15. Other information that we are required to collect, highest level of schooling completed. Again, this is self-reported information from the student. Location of the prior schooling, that's U.S.-based or non-U.S.-based. We suggest that this information is collected on intake forms for ease of data collection. For an agency level or CBO level, you are also required to collect information on personnel involved. This includes number of part-time and full-time instructors, administrators, and support staff, the number of years of teaching experience, and the type of teaching certification that they have. We suggest for those of you who work for districts and colleges to work with existing systems that may have already captured the information. And if the information is not available, then developing a local survey is definitely encouraged. So how NRS data is collected? Obviously, it's collected at the local level using standardized records or forms. There is a sample form out there. However, it is not a required form. You are certainly welcome to develop your own system. Some of you have online systems. Some of you have paper-based systems. We acknowledge that you guys are probably collecting additional information locally that would not appear on the sample form. The intake staff must be able to collect and record NRS measures related to age, ethnicity, race, and gender, employment status, prior schooling level, and location. That last point, as I mentioned earlier, is self-reported. Does not require documentation from the student. It just requires a selection by the student. Teachers should be collecting and reporting attendance, collecting and reporting student progress, assisting with goal setting, and report other missing information. So the reporting of data it differs depending on the type of organization that you are. All the information is reported up to the state. It is not directly reported to OCTE. It is reported to the state, and then the state develops the report that is submitted to the NRS online system. Districts would be reporting through the Workforce Development Information System, also known as WDIS. The colleges would be using the Florida College Student Database. And then CBOs would be submitting individual student records through a web-based submission similar to colleges. All three of these have different reporting windows. The reporting windows for 2014-15 have not yet been released, but we do anticipate that they will be released in July of this year. We definitely encourage not only the collection of data, but using data quality and data reporting to help improve your processes. In addition to developing a standardized intake process and forms, the collection of individual student records into a relational database, we encourage that you are collecting data monthly at a minimum, and that you are running edit checks monthly at a minimum, not just during the three required survey windows. We believe that it is the best practice that you are producing monthly reports for program improvement, looking at students that are progressing through the program, looking at test record data, and then, of course, submitting to the data to the state on a prescribed time schedule. There are some large windows. However, we anticipate that you've already done some validation and report checking before submitting to the state. As mentioned earlier, we do have performance measures. For those of you familiar with NRS data tables, we primarily use the information that is reported for tables 4 and 5 when it comes to our local performance, but it's not limited to that. We use these to calculate performance measures and set state targets. These are negotiated annually with OCTE. I know that we talked a little bit about this earlier. In your packet, there were the Florida targets for state targets for Florida's performance. Please be aware that those are still in the negotiation process and have not been finalized, so there may be some change to those targets. We do know that we will be using those targets when we are looking at local performance. We will be comparing your local performance to the state performance target for those different measures. Recipients are expected to meet the targets or demonstrate improvement. Agencies that are found not to have either met the state target or demonstrate improvement within a certain threshold will be required to complete a program improvement plan, depending on the cycle of data review that we're under. Here's some contact information. My phone number and email are here as well. If you have any general data reporting issues, data element definitions or descriptions, you're certainly welcome to contact me. If you have an MIS question specifically to the submission of data or local reports, I would suggest that you contact Debbie Gaver. And then the Florida NRS website and the US DOE website for NRS have a lot of resources available when it comes to the information that is collected and how it's defined.
Thank you, Carol. As we switch back to the application, I thought that was a good place in the application to review the accountability and reporting information, because that's found on page 18 of the adult general application. So be mindful of the expectation. If you are selected as an awarded agency, there's a certain level of expectation for student record and teacher information that is required under the law. We have concluded our open time to submit questions. We had an open window of time from the point of posting to April 21 for general questions. We post two series of questions. I strongly encourage that you go back and look at both sets of those questions. That would probably help you in preparing your application. We've already talked about our review method and how we propose to get our programs, our applications evaluated. It's important to know that the department, we have the right to negotiate, not fund an agency, or require additional information from an agency beyond what is printed here. I spent a lot of time on the contractual service information. I won't spend any more time on that, but that is important. Equipment purchase. We've referenced some federal law here as well as state. If you're not aware of the OMB circular and EGGR, I strongly encourage you to find those two resources. That's from the U.S. Department of Education. It's a governing document. Both of them are single documents at this time, governing documents on the expectations and budget management. However, really, really soon, if you haven't heard, there's going to be an omni-circular or a super circular that's out that combines those two documents. So for some of our providers, you may be familiar with that. If you are selected as one of our providers, I am aware that the department will be providing some training information in regards to the Omni, also known as the Super Circular. But that is definitely a document that you want to get your hands on. It provides you with those allowable expenditure categories, and it breaks down what you can and cannot spend money on. And it's going to be helpful as you prepare your budget. In regards to equipment, most importantly here, Florida Department of Education, we have imposed in our division a $1,000 threshold for equipment purchases, which means if you choose to purchase equipment, $1,000 or greater, you must submit a form, a projected equipment purchase form that's included in this application. One thing I do want to caution you to, under EGGR 80.32, it requires that you keep physical inventory on all equipment purchased with the federal dollars. So in some cases, when our monitors have gone out, they've not been able to find an inventory on equipment items less than a certain dollar amount. The federal law is more restrictive, and it states if you use federal dollars to purchase a piece of equipment, you must inventory that document, that item, and keep it inventoried at least every 2 years. Record retention, I mentioned the 5-year threshold. If you're in an audit finding, an audit situation, it's 5 years after. At the conclusion of your funding year, all providers will be required to submit a financial summary report entitled a Project Distribution Report, DOE 499. You'll also be required to report any program income through a program income report form entitled a 499A. We've provided technical assistance and information out on our website regarding the program income, as well as a sample of the DOE 499 form, if you're not familiar with that form. Intellectual property, please read that. Basically, if you use the federal money to purchase the item, it's subject to these additional provisions. Planning or supplement or supplant, please be mindful of that. This will come into play with some of our existing providers who will be submitting an application and continuing in the funding cycle. Please be mindful of that. Non-duplicative, again, you want to look across your community to see who's offering adult ed services, and then many opportunities try to partner to the best you can with delivering those services. Tara did an excellent job on reporting outcomes. It is a must. It is a requirement. If you receive the dollars, you must report the information. She provided to you information on the three different reporting systems, one for district, one for college, and one for our community-based organizations. Compliance monitoring, all of our applicants who are awarded funds will be subject to monitoring. That monitoring may take place in the form of an on-site monitoring. It may take place in the form of a desktop review or monitoring process. If you have not looked at our protocol document, we do have our monitoring and quality assurance document available on our website. You can get at a glance what we would look for and what we would, if we come out to your site, some of the tools that we would use in that monitoring process. Be familiar, again, with the Green Book, our new applicants. You will hear us use that term a lot. That book provides you with a lot of information. Most importantly, if you are awarded and you would like to change something within your application, it could be your budget, could be scope, you would want to read the section on budget amendments so that you will be aware of the requirements for that. We have the federal DEPA requirement that you must submit this information in your application. It's part of your narrative section, how your agency implement and ensure that DEPA requirements are implemented. Equity and access, we put that in kind of new this year. It's not a new law. It's a federal law that's been in existence for a number of years, many, many years. But what we found from our compliance monitoring team as they've gone out here recently in the last program year, they've noticed that a lot of the programs are not meeting that equity and access requirement in posting certain information. It's a lot of information that you want to read up on, but if you're one of our districts and colleges, you may wish to speak with your equity coordinator. We will be expecting that all federal regulations, rules regarding equity and access, equal opportunity, would be adhered to with any of our awarded agencies. If you're one of our FBO CBOs and you are awarded and required to do the invoice reimbursement process, we've provided a little information here on page 24 of the request for proposal, kind of giving you a highlight of what we would expect you to submit to us to receive your reimbursement. Page 25 gives you the format, technical format for submitting your application. It's important, number one, where it states you must send one original and 7 identical copies. It's amazing we had to put the word identical because the information is going to go out to the reviewers. And we have had situations where the 2 copies or the 3 copies were not identical. I strongly encourage you in a competitive process that you wait and copy the document at the end after you've secured all of your proper signatures so that you can ensure that all of the required documents are there. It was really, really serious in our last 11-12 competitive process. One applicant provided us with 2 different samples, and when we sent them out to the reviewer, a couple of reviewers sent back, not included in the application, not included in the application. But I was looking at my original, and I saw it. I'm like, it's in there. I can see it. Well, for some reason, she had copied the entire packet, then decided to change some things and add some documents, information in there and submit the original. I will tell you that agency was not funded because I was not allowed to go back and give that information. So I emphasize that section because we have experienced a situation that did not turn out favorable to the eligible applicant. Remember the checklist. Remember the formatting requirements. When you're packaging, I'm at the bottom of page 25, ensure that the original and all 7 copies individually with a removable binder clip. We're not interested in the fancy binding covers because we technically must take these apart so that we can give them to the reviewers. So if you're able to use those simple clips and clip in the upper right, left-hand corner, do not staple, no spiral binders. That will help and facilitate the process a lot easier for us. We are not allowed to add, make copies, or do anything such as that. Do not include covers, tabs. Do not submit unrequested materials. Some people want to provide all of the supplemental material to really showcase their program. Unfortunately, the reviewers will not have an opportunity to look at all those beautiful colored brochures and newspaper articles. If you will stick to the 20-page minimum and those required attached documents, it will facilitate us getting through the review process a lot quicker. You are required to send the application to the address listed on the bottom of page 25. It's also on the slide presentation 28. You cannot send the application to Gloria. You cannot send the application to anyone else other than the address listed here because that's the office that's going to officially clock your document in and ensure that you will be a part of the actual review process. Continuously looking in the application, page 28, We've developed a standard performance and accountability form that must be attached in the application. You simply copy this form, put it in your application. You do not have to type anything or write anything. We've done that for you because we know from this particular program what our performance expectations are and how we are proposing to measure those, how we're proposing when the deliverables are due. So we have standardized this form for all of our applicants. I'm going to quickly just go through the attachments. We have our allocation. Note at the top, until we actually receive our award letter from the federal government, we can tell you that this is the proposed allocation. You are to apply and submit your application based on the amounts listed here. If for some reason the federal government increase our allocation when we get our final notice and it requires a recalculation, we will definitely notify you of the increase and or decrease that will be required. Page 32 of the attachment, some information on our state performance information. 33, just want to reiterate something I heard Tara mention. You are required to submit this form back to us on page 33 of the in the attachment section with your agency information. But she mentioned to you that the proposed state performance targets for 14-15, at this point, we have not received our actual performance targets from OCTE. So the measure that is currently in the application will change or may change once we receive our approval. And that is mentioned down at the bottom. So whatever the final performance expectations set by OCTE for the state of Florida, that is what each provider will be held. The regional workforce form, it is a form that we put in each of our applications. Under the federal law, the Investment Act, we are required to collaborate with our one-stop, new name, career source, also known Department of Labor formerly, Department of Economic Opportunity, Workforce Florida. So now it is CareerSource. And this particular document just simply informs that office that you are offering the service. You do not have to get their approval. All we want to know is that you've shared a copy of your application with them just in case someone enters the enter their office and are in need of adult ed services, they can at least say, I know that they're offering adult ed services at the college, at the district, or at this local community center. It's just for reference. I will say that it is a great partner to help you recruit students, that if you have not reached out to the CareerSource agency in your area, you're missing a great opportunity for collaboration because many times people in need of services will come to their office and they can directly refer those participants over to your program. We're going to move forward to the PowerPoint slide 39 and 40. 39, I want to reiterate that on our CBOs and FBOs post-award, which means if you go through the competitive process and you are selected, we will require this list of additional information from you. You are not required to submit it by May 19th with your original application, but you will be required to submit it if you are selected for the award. A couple of resources on page 40, the Adult Ed and Family Literacy Act, our Quality Assurance, our Monitoring Manual, the OMB circular, our green book, you've heard me mention that a number of times. EGGAR is a great document, and the terms, conditions, and assurances that your college president and or your district superintendent or your executive director will be required to sign. You will want to read that to see what we are asking them to sign and what you are accepting when you accept the federal money through the Department of Education. I'm going to pause and allow Zelda will give you some information on the English Literacy and Civics Education application.
Just a few points that I want to make about this grant, because it's a lot like the one that Gloria has just gone through. But the main purpose of it is to integrate civics education into English literacy instruction. So as your students are learning how to speak English, they learn about their community and the services it offers. And some of the things that they'll also be able to do is navigate the government, whether that's local, state, or federal, and looking at education, workplace systems, and key institutions such as banking and health. This program should include activities that help with problem solving, understanding some of the local resources and services that might be available in their community, and also citizenship. You know, how can they achieve their citizenship, their U.S. citizenship? Understanding the labor market information. You know, those students can even go through choices for occupational information. And then there's some other activities that are listed in the RFP. Now, the things that should be included in your civics should be like responsibilities and rights of citizenship, naturalization procedures. There's 100 questions that that are available through our section that we can provide to you, and also the N-400 form, how to complete that form. Civic participation is key to that, and also learning something about the U.S. history and government, just some basic information about important events and names and government holders and so on. All of those things are listed in your grant. Okay, one of the things that I want to mention here on professional development, as I did on the other grant, for the last 2 years, we have done a series of regional workshops on integrating civics with your English instruction. We will continue to do that this year, so as you're looking at your professional development activities, know that there will be some state-sponsored things that your teachers can go to. Now, you're probably wondering, well, where do I address that in my grant? If you look under staffing, when you're talking about the different criteria that you have to complete, it talks about training and professional development in there. So that's where you can address the activities that you're going to do to ensure that your teachers are trained. Now, one of the things that makes it really easy, when you look at the ESOL framework, and this is the course that you're allowed to integrate the civics into with this grant, so if you look at those, each one of those activities and standards have a C by it that stands for civics. So just about everything that's included in that will give you the opportunity to include some civics. Now, there is a free online course. We've got that URL listed there. And also, Phil Anderson has put together a teacher handbook that has a number of resources in that that can also help you know more about how to integrate the civics. But be sure to remember, though, that we will be offering the EL Civics, and we'll also be looking at some additional training for your ESOL teachers that we'll be able to offer through IPDA and through our AIDS project. So be looking for that soon and include it in your grant.
Thank you, Zelda. Just a few highlights on the English Literacy and Civics Request for Proposal. When you're responding to your narrative section, I strongly encourage you to read the criteria. They are not identical. Some of the sections are slightly different on English literacy and civics. So you do not want to submit the same narrative that you submit on adult general for your civic application. I guarantee it will not fare well in the criteria evaluation. So please read the English literacy and civics application as a standalone and a separate application if you choose to submit. Many of the sections are similar, but there are one or two that specifically want you to hone in on the delivery of English literacy and civics education. With that, I think we are towards the end of our presentation. I kind of jumped around, and I'm going to ask Julie to give you some information. I just want to reiterate on the volunteers. We need volunteers for both adult general education and civics education. So if you're interested in becoming one of our reviewers, when you access our online registration for that, it will you can indicate which type of program you want to volunteer. Julie?
Hi, I'm Julie Dillard, and I'm just here to inform you about the survey that we have available for this conference call. We have a link in the PowerPoint to the survey on our website. We also have a link in the PowerPoint where you can go for the reviewer registration. And you can go there, and if you have any questions, you can contact me. My name and number and email address are also included in this PowerPoint presentation. So for either the survey or the reviewer registration, just go to the PowerPoint presentation or give me a call.
Thank you, Julie. And we do listen, and read the feedback. Julie will be reviewing each and every one of the survey follow-up comments, and we do try to incorporate those as we continue to work toward improving this process. At this time, I will take questions. I'm going to take you off of conference mute, which is
pound five.
Presentation mode is now disabled.
Okay.
Thank you. What we're going to do with the questions and answers, if you would like to ask a question regarding anything that we've discussed in our presentation today, if you'll just give me your name and agency, and we will be able to answer your question. We will have Tara is here, Elda, and myself. We are here to answer any questions. Do I have any questions at this time?
Hello, this is Jane Hughes from Broward County.
Yes.
We just want to verify the fact that adult education funds can be used for fees and tuition.
They said that.
I mentioned that in the PowerPoint presentation. It's also one of our questions and answers. If you'll go out on our website, you'll see two sets of questions and answers. The response to that question, and the question is, can you use adult education federal dollars to pay tuition and fees for our adult ed students? The law, there is nothing in the law which prohibits you from doing that. It is an allowable expense under the category of support services or minimizing barriers for the participants. However, the federal dollars are not designed to supplement state-mandated costs. So I strongly encourage that you seek other sources, private donations, to support tuition, state tuition mandate. But you are allowed under the law, under the auspice of support services, minimizing barriers.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have another question?
Hello, from Florida State. May we ask a question, please?
Yes, Florida State.
All right, with the beginning year 14-15, where we will be looking at the targeted projections of the 90%, if by chance you do not make that 90% and the second year you would go, we understand that you would do the improvement plan, how would that be perceived at the state? In the same manner as an audit criticism or in another way?
We believe that continuous program improvement, that's what we believe in. We have set our standards high. We have set everyone's standards at the state level. We are fully aware that 100% of our funded providers will not meet the state target.
Hello?
Can you hear me, ma'am?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yeah, how many can?
So with that said, apparently we have someone that we can hear some background noise. If you could please put your phones on mute by pressing star 6. As I continue to answer that question, how will we perceive you as a provider if you do not meet the 90 or you do not meet the state target? That's why we have the implementation or the improvement plan process in place so that we can help you along the way meet the target, meet the state target. So I don't know how other to answer that. We won't have a negative perception. We just know that by you responding to the improvement plan, we know that we need to offer technical assistance or targeted technical assistance to your program to help you meet it.
Okay, so I'm hearing, from my understanding, I'm hearing that that would be looked at a little bit differently than an audit criticism, because it's going to be more of a mentorship. If you didn't meet that target that second year, that the state would, through our improvement plan, guide us or mentor us to help us do whatever is needed to do, along with what suggestions we come up with, to make sure that we can try to reach those target projections.
You are correct. It is not an audit finding. You are correct.
All right. Thank you so much for that clarification.
Okay. Additional questions, please? With that, I'd like to thank
Keith Hatcher, Columbia County School District. Looking at page 34, a workforce board coordination assurance form. I noticed that there's a May 5th, 2014 deadline for the regional workforce boards to submit any comments. Is that a typo, or I'm not exactly sure how that can happen if our actual RFPs are not due back to you until May 19th?
That's probably a typo, but if you'll just send them the form, usually we don't get any respond back, but that's probably a typo. We'll probably have to look at that timing. It will not negatively impact your application review.
Okay, thank you.
No. Great. Then I'd like to thank you all for participating in the conference call today. Good luck to each and every one of you, and we look forward to offering and supporting you with adult ed services for 2014-15. Have a wonderful day.
Take you out of the loop. Out of the loop almost basically because, let's say for example, after that 2 months, support the grant funding. And if you get funding, you got to go into setting up and implementing. You just need to know that the reviewer, and you have 3 to 5 of those things to do. Other grants, and up front, much of it needs it was worse. The pay was fairly good because they were paying for starting in July. This school year ending now. It's 2013-2014. That's ending in August, June. Next year we start at 2014-15. For multiple years, the next year will be 2015-16 for the years, the 50 years overlap. The 50 year in Palm Beach County is in July, the end of June. Right. What I'm saying, if you submit, why go through all of the problems if you don't want to be selected? So if you want to be selected, go through the process. Because right now they haven't selected anybody. They just put it out there saying, if you're interested, apply. Okay? And if you're chosen when you apply, then this is what you've agreed to accept. And what I'm saying is, when you apply with the understanding that I'm going to get accepted. I'm saying the same thing, to apply, trying to get accepted. Just know that to get accepted, you almost automatically have to be out of the loop. Get enough time to review those and then participate in a startup program with all of the appointments and all of the setting up and all of the things you got to do for a program that's starting in 2.5 months. Okay, now. Out of July, so about 2 months. My idea is information, PowerPoint, what I'm trying to do, Erica, is the decisions you make will be your decision. You're not to be bringing to a decision. You gotta live with it, tuck it in. Document. Came back in the house and I saw you driving off in the car.
Yeah.
I said, you know what, it would have made a lot of sense for them to just go home in the van.
Yeah.
Then I had to come back and go back. But I mean, works up in that building. Where I am here with this. Or if I can see it, if I can help a local organization, I need to do that for the ad, for the exposure, because I'm getting plenty of calls. You know what I'm saying? Because the media is getting out there.
Calling. Say answer or reject.
Answer. Hello? Let me give you a number to call me back out. I could hear you better. Or either if you give me one, I'll call you right back. Give me a number to call you. I'll call you. 850-850-09. Right back. Got an idea what the facility might be.